Hi there, Neil here, and the Living Planet team is taking a well-earned break, but we have prepared a mini-series so that you have something to start the new year with while we're away. And we thought a good dose of nature would be just the ticket to beat that old January blues. And so over the next 3 weeks, we'll be exploring our deep connection to the sea. We also find out what honeybees get up to in the winter, and it's more than you might think, by the way. And we find out how the unique landscape of Yorkshire has inspired some unforgettable works of literature. And we'll be starting this series with the sea. There's something about the sea, isn't there? That feeling when you walk a rugged coastal path and hear the waves crashing against the rocks or gently rippling on the sandy beach. It's that magnetic pull and the feeling of having arrived where you're meant to be. And at the same time, you look to the horizon and wonder whether the journey may just be beginning. But what is this hold that ocean water seems to have over us and keeps us coming back for more? Tamsin Walker tries to answer that question in this first episode of our Naturally Connected mini-series.
Oh, wow. It's so gorgeous. The sun is literally just starting to poke its head up over the headland. It's this gorgeous display of light. All the kind of corny classic pinks and the oranges and the purples. Just yawning their way across the sky. And the other side is still very dark.
There's something about the sea, something that grips me in a way other landscapes don't. It's love at a level that kind of befuddles me, a love that's endured for as long as I can remember, even though I live too far from any coastline to have anything more than a long-distance relationship. My affection never dims. It's simply there as a fact of my life. For a long time, I attributed this seaside love to having grown up in England, in places that were never more than a couple of hours from the coast, and oftentimes very much closer. Many of my earliest memories, from having learnt to swim, to building sandcastles, throwing seaweed at my brothers, and jumping the waves with anyone game enough to brave the cold, are connected to the North Sea. While I'm sure that all of that feeds into my affection, and while I love going back home and reconnecting with the waters of my upbringing, these days, I'm pretty sure there's more to it than that. Because what the sea does to me feels so primal that it can cut through whatever might have been churning around in my mind, almost stopping thought altogether. It literally brings me to my senses. So that when I'm on the shore or in the water, life becomes about what I can see and hear, about the salty smell and taste on the air, the crunch of sand and shells underfoot, and the sensation of the water on my skin. And the sum of those many parts is so much more powerful as an experience than any thought my mind could dream up.
There's something very special about this place, where you just feel you can't escape the raw, rugged nature of what it is right in front of you or here, pretty much surrounding you. And you can't escape how tiny and inconsequential you are as an individual.
And yet, there's a thing, as we run meditation retreats here, and we did run and meditating with the sea, I had everyone sitting at the bottom of the sea wall watching the waves lap against the shore. Mm. So that's very specific. It's like few nice rocks and a few pebbles moving in there and the waves lapping against it, but it's still the same body of water that stretches around the whole planet, but it's also very, very intimate.
Mm.
You can get into the sea, you can swim in the sea, you can paddle around its edges. It's not empty, it's not like an abstraction, it's a real thing, but it's just colossal. Mm. But it can be personally colossal as well. You can be sort of tickling the edge of this gigantic being. It's like it's a weird thing that it's intimate at the same time as being way, way beyond human.
Psychotherapist and meditation teacher Alistair Appleton and his partner Daniel live in an off-grid, 2 centuries-old Coast Guard's cottage on the south coast of England. As in, right on the coast. With honest-to-goodness, breathtaking views of the iconic chalk cliffs known as the Seven Sisters. The first time I visited, the sheer magnitude of what was in front of and all around me was weirdly, surprisingly emotional. And apparently, not uncommonly so.
Very often when they turn this corner, so you come into the house and you turn left, and suddenly there's this big vista. People either burst into tears.
I did.
Yeah. They burst into tears. Or the other thing is that they just ignore it. They turn
really?
They turn away from it and like start talking about something conceptual. Because it's a big open space. It's a big, very inhuman space, and I think that freaks some people out.
Well, I think it's understandable to be afraid of the sea. When we were watching that boat out there last night bobbing around, I wouldn't have wanted to be on that boat.
No, this is very mild, like in the winter when the waves go over the house and the house shakes,
and then you're aware of like how absolutely relentless the sea can be.
Does it ever frighten you?
No, because the house is a bit like a ship.
Coastal erosion of the land on which the house was built means that it and the others next to it are so close to the water's edge that being inside is the nearest I have ever come to feeling like I'm on a boat while still on dry land. Especially in this incredible little alcove where back in the day the Coast Guard would have watched out for smugglers. With glass on 3 sides, this tiny nook offers unspoiled, unbroken views of the sea and the cliffs it's been hitting up against for longer than anyone can remember. A fortifying concrete wall that prevents the cottages from falling prey to the water also adds to the sense of proximity to it. So when the waves come in, their thudding sound is carried deep into the bones of the old house.
That is one of the most magical times, when it's a high tide and a full moon and dark, because the way that the moon plays on, and wavy, and the way that the moon plays on a full bowl of water there is, I mean, it's otherworldly. It's so beautiful. And you so rarely see it, because you just have to be living by it every day.
Well, we got lucky
to catch
then.
It.
It was otherworldly. I remember walking across the wooden floor of the house. Everyone else had gone to bed, but there was no sense of being alone. It was like watching a play in which the moon was the light, dripping silver onto a stage filled with wild, roaring, untethered life. I don't know how long I stood and watched from within the unlit room, but it was a while. And when I did finally turn in for the night, it was indeed to the rhythmic whack of the waves against the foundations, knowing it was an experience I'm unlikely to ever forget. But come the morning, it was a different picture entirely. The waves now lapped calmly at the shore, almost winking with a secret knowledge of their unruly behaviour of the night before. The moon had been chased away by the sun, and the dark expanse of excitement and fury had been replaced by a beckoning mass of shimmering turquoise. The difference was literally night and day. The calm after the storm, indeed. And that shifting temperament is perhaps what makes the sea so endlessly watchable and so unique.
And if you're landlocked, if you're in the middle of the land, everything is very samey, you know, apart from the season change. Things are not changing minute to minute, day by day, like, you know, hills are hills. But here, everything is so unstable. The sea makes you feel very unstable.
Interesting.
The land allows you to feel more permanent, solid, singular, which of course is an illusion because we're not permanent, solid, or singular. Whereas the sea is just like, you are always changing, and I'm much, much bigger. I mean, you look at, you know, this is the sea. This is the same sea that links up with the whole Atlantic Ocean, the whole of the Pacific Ocean, the Indian Ocean, the Antarctic Ocean, the polar ice caps. This is all the same thing. There's no separation.
That's something that I've always thought about the sea. On the one hand, we call it the sea as a single entity. But on the other, human language has carved it up into constructed bodies of water to be assigned to different countries or even fought over. And watching the waves crash against the land that was once physically connected to France, the fallacy of that separation seems palpable. The sea cares no more for boundaries than it does names.
All you can be is just in its presence. You're not going to master it. It's always going to be in excess, wildly in excess of anything that you can do to tame it with your cognitive mind. It embodies all of that sense of many things at once, coming and going, impermanence, interdependence. So actually being more sea-like, I think, is actually very good for one's mental health, if uncomfortable.
That feeling of it being good for me is very familiar. So much so that I've perhaps subconsciously made it part of my children's lives, opting to take them to the coast rather than the mountains or the forest whenever there's been a chance to do so. And though they too used to love building sandcastles and jumping the waves, I've never really asked them about their own relationship with the sea until now.
It calms me.
Calms you?
Yeah. I think because it moves, it speaks, you know, it. You're more connected to it as a human being, you know, because like sand, also part of nature, but it doesn't naturally move, it's just there. But the sea, it has more character to it, so you feel more connected, especially when you're in it.
Yeah?
Yeah, because you're moving with it.
And you look at it, does it make you want to go in it?
It's a bit chilly right now.
Do you think you're a sea person, or more of a land person? You know, if you were choosing a landscape,
I think I'd be a really good mermaid, honestly.
But when it came to experiencing the chilly sea from the inside, there was not a mermaid or even a regular daughter in sight. And maybe they had the right idea.
It's definitely cold. But not as cold as it might be. The only thing is, it's so flat, you have to walk forever to actually be fully submerged. Oh, and the sky, it's just like this unbelievable palette of colour, and so gorgeous, and so expansive, and so unknown. Well, now it's going down quite quickly. Okay, under I go. That is cold, definitely cold. Wow, it is just spectacularly beautiful. I'm going to go for a swim.
Back on dry land on the same breezy beach where I watched the sun come up, the sky is slowly shaking off the light of day. A steady stream of people, dressed in warm clothes, walk the shoreline as close to the water as they can without getting their feet wet. They take photos of the horizon and of themselves against its glorious backdrop, or sit on blankets and sip drinks as they watch the dusk descend. And the whole scene paints a declaration of love. It's a picture of both longing and belonging. Belonging to something much bigger than each one, or indeed all of us. Something maybe beyond the limits of our true comprehension, yet something we're drawn back to again and again. Perhaps because we do instinctively understand that it's a reflection of ourselves. Or simply because we feel that it does us good to be around it. Or maybe even a bit of both.
This week's episode was produced by Tamsin Walker and edited by me, Neil King. Our sound engineer was Jürgen Kuhn. We hope this episode made for a good start to the new year for you. If what you heard moved or inspired you in any way, or if you have any questions, please do send us an email or voice message to livingplanet@dw.com. We'd really love to hear from you. Next week, we'll be exploring our connection to honeybees and what they get up to during the colder months. In the meantime, please check out our YouTube channel, DW Podcasts, where you can find Living Planet bonus material. That's it. Thank you for listening and sharing Living Planet with friends and family. My name is Neil King. Living Planet is brought to you by DW in Bonn, Germany.
On this season of Threshold, we'll meet people who are devoting their lives to listening to what other beings are saying.
These animals have incredible social lives. We need a better understanding of how important sound is in their society.
It was a sound that I was completely unfamiliar with, and I could be confident that no human had ever heard that sound before.
Find Threshold wherever you listen to podcasts.